Quasi-Cerebral Talk and Tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We are the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded stolen territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikutlem First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on unceded stolen territories of the Katsi, Kwikutlem, and Stola First Nations. And here at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship of the lands and the waters. My name is Leslie, and this week on the program, we're going to be doing a modest deep dive. I'll keep it humble, okay? I don't know if I'm going to be able to touch all the deep issues around this particular topic, but let's say, in order to not overestimate myself, it's like a knee-deep frolic into the waters of this topic. I'm talking about obsessive-compulsive disorder, because the second week of October is Obsessive Compulsive Disorder Awareness Week, OCD Awareness Week. And this is a topic that is very, very close to my heart. I think it is so important to eliminate the nuances and complexities of OCD, because there is a lot of mythology and stigma around this mental health disorder, this chronic and complex mental health disorder. Additionally, a lot of that stigma and mythology is fueled by actually people's pretty shallow understanding of how our brains work. And so I think that even if you don't have obsessive compulsive disorder, if you don't have an anxiety disorder, learning a little bit about OCD can be quite helpful, because it helps us understand why this particular issue can be so devastating for those who do have it. OCD is and can be a very debilitating, disabling mental health disorder. It is one that can feel particularly scary, and I'll talk about a little bit why that is. But there is also very good research and advocacy to support those who do have obsessive compulsive disorder, and there is evidence-based therapies that support one's recovery for them to learn essentially how to manage this issue. I want to talk a little bit more about that today. In terms of music, today's episode is brought to you by a playlist that I like to call Feel Bad Music. There's no irony here. OCD just sucks, and a lot of these songs are about feeling bad, and that's it. But they're bangers. They sound really cool. So enjoy. We're gonna starting off with one of my favorites. Here's Tallies with Giving Up. Obviously, you shouldn't, but it's on theme with the short playlist, okay? Enjoy. We'll be right back. Giving Up by Tallies here on CJSF 90.1 FM on typically Tuesdays. Obviously, don't give up. Let's just the vibe of today's playlist here on the program. The theme being feel bad songs, because, you know, obsessive compulsive disorder feels really bad. And my name is Leslie, and today's topic is about obsessive compulsive disorder. It is OCD Awareness Week, and I want to talk about this complex and chronic mental health issue that has very, very strongly mythologized and also stigmatized in the real world, which has prevented people from being able to seek support, real care, because of all the stigma around it and all the mythology around it. According to the Canadian Association for Mental Health, people who have obsessive compulsive disorder tend to spend more than a decade to actually receive a proper and accurate diagnosis. And I really, really think that a really big reason why is because folks don't really understand what OCD is about. OCD is not just being quirky. It is not straightening the books on your bookshelf because you like it to look that way. It is not about being very good about washing your hands and cleaning up after yourself during flu season because you don't want to catch a virus and you don't want to potentially spread germs and bacteria around. Obsessive compulsive disorder is not perfectionism. It's not being a little bit strict or particular about wanting things to look a certain way or wanting your project to go a certain way or having a very routinized way of taking care of your housework or something like that. It is a very, very complex, chronic mental health issue that at times can be very debilitating and even disabling for the person who has it. And while certainly there are people who might have a very routinized way of going about their life, you know, they might be thought of as quote-unquote type A, who also happen to have obsessive compulsive disorder, there might be people who really do like to align their bookshelves in a certain specific way because it makes them feel good, and they also happen to have obsessive compulsive disorder. And of course, there are certainly people who obsessively and compulsively wash their hands during and even past cold and flu season. Those stereotypes of obsessive compulsive disorder are flattening and also inaccurate ways to understand this very complex and chronic mental health issue. To understand obsessive compulsive disorder, then we need to really understand what it is made of. Let's look just directly at the name, right? Obsessions, compulsions, and that it is a disorder. In obsessive compulsive disorder, obsessions are unrelenting, repetitive, disturbing thoughts that cause distress, anxiety, deep discomfort, disgust, feelings of shame and guilt to the person who has them. Because the thoughts are unwanted, a person with OCD will perform compulsions, and compulsions are actions that are done in order for them to feel like they can be released from the anxiety and distress that these repetitive, unrelenting, disturbing thoughts are giving them. And as you're listening to this, you might be thinking to yourself, okay, so what? You know, I've done that before too. I've had like weird thoughts, and then I had to do something to make myself feel not weird anymore. What's so special about that, Leslie? What characterizes the disorder part of obsessive compulsive disorder is that it will take up most of, if not all, of your day. The reason for this, as I've understood it, based on what I've learned from experts and clinicians who work with people who have OCD is that the person who have obsessive compulsive disorder, there's a part in their brain that is constantly kind of like sending off these signals that tell them that they must be anxious. It's a false signal though. In order for that signal to be, you know, turned off, they have to perform a compulsion. When you do that though, if you do that enough times, you're actually training your brain to always give out false alarms, essentially. And that is the reason why people who have obsessive compulsive disorder, they perform a compulsion once, and later on they have this temporary relief. But then further down the road, you know, the next day or in a couple of hours, they have those intense obsessive thoughts again, and they perform the compulsions, but the compulsions don't really help, and so they have to perform more compulsions, and so they get stuck in this sort of like OCD loop in which they have no choice. They feel like they have no choice but to always keep performing the compulsions, because the obsessions, they actually come back stronger and they hit you harder than before. And I think maybe I'm explaining this in a way that isn't all that graceful, and maybe it's actually a little bit hard to grasp, but you think about it like this, right? And I don't really want to like infantilize anybody who has obsessive compulsive disorder, but I want to just use this as the example. There's an American OCD clinician named Nathan Peterson who gave this example in a video that I watched of his. You can kind of think of the OCD brain as kind of like a child who wants candy, okay? The obsessions are if the baby is screaming and throwing a tantrum and needs to have candy now. If you don't give it candy, it's gonna keep yelling and screaming, you know? When it happened the first time, it was like kind of gentle. It was just like whiny, you know, kind of annoying, whatever. You gave the child candy just to like shut them up because you have other things to do. Giving the candy is sort of like the compulsion in this analogy, but the screaming, crying child is the obsession. And I'm not a parent, so obviously, you know, take my words with a grain of salt. But having an OCD brain is kind of like constantly having to give the screaming, crying child candy, more and more candy, or else it will be unsatisfied and it will not leave you alone. The issue, of course, is that you are teaching your child that they can scream loudly and they will be rewarded with candy. A similar kind of idea goes with understanding the OCD loop and the OCD cycle. Your brain is screaming at you that you need to be worried about this particular thing. And it could be about anything, but it's got you. You have to be worried. If you don't stop worrying, if you don't stop thinking about it, if you don't address it now, it's going to ruin your life. You need to know, you need to figure it out now, etc., 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 and then you perform a compulsion, your brain is being trained that every time it has this anxiety, it has this worry, you will be able to quell it. You'll be able to make it feel better by performing a compulsion. You might be thinking then like, okay, well, Leslie, isn't just like, don't you just not think about it then? Like, can't you just stop thinking about it? Doesn't that... you just simply like turn your brain off. I want to give you an example, okay? And this is the example that brain researchers always give when it comes down to OCD. I want you to clear out everything in your brain. Just like don't think about anything, okay? This is the thought experiment that we're gonna do. You and me, listener. Don't think about anything. Stop thinking about stuff, okay? And especially, I don't want you to think about a white bear. Don't think about it. Stop thinking about, like, don't, just put it down. If you're thinking about a white bear, don't think about it. Stop thinking about it, okay? Nothing. I want nothing in your brain, and especially not a white bear. Stop thinking about it. Were you able to not think about a white bear when I told you to not think about a white bear? Probably not, actually. That's just not really how our brains work. Our brains are kind of like trained to think about things that we don't want to think about a lot of the times. So it doesn't work out that way. The other thing to understand about obsessive compulsive disorder is that it is one that centers around the inability to accept uncertainty. It's about control, and it's also about knowing exactly what is going to happen in the future and what happened in the past, and knowing who you are exactly right now, how things are working around you right now. It is very, very, very difficult for a person with obsessive compulsive disorder to sit with the possibility of not knowing something, 100%. That's one of the really big reasons why that alarm system in their minds, it goes off, because it's about any little thing, right? You could perform a compulsion and feel as though, okay, you're done. But the reason why that alarm system in the brain always fires off again is because there's just a little bit of uncertainty that can rear its head that causes the person intense distress and anxiety. That's the reason why compulsions never work. It's because you can be confident about something, but you can't always be certain. 100% certainty doesn't exist at all in our lives. Life is weird. Life is strange. The world is a messed up and weird place. It can be a magical and fun place, of course, but there are always outliers. There are always things that happen that are stranger than fiction. And your brain knows that and is afraid of the possibility, afraid of not knowing, not being able to control things 100%, not being able to sit with uncertainty. And because life is simply uncertain, that alarm system is always firing off. And the person who has OCD always has to go and try to turn off the alarm. Let's come back and talk a little bit about OCD subtypes and the ego dystonic nature of OCD after this music break. Here is more from this feels bad music playlist. This is Try by Meet Me at the Altar.
Changing, no difference between then and now. Smile like I'm all good. I bottle all my feelings, don't share them, but I know I should.
complaining, but you keep opening your mouth. Last year said you were changing, no difference between then and now. Try not to show I'm anxious, I crack a smile like I'm all good. I bottle all my feelings, don't share them, but I know I should. With no time of breathing, at least I try.
This is Bird Note. Why do birds consistently follow certain routes in their great journeys across the continents? Pathways of migration evolved, shaped by the wind. During the height of the last ice age 18,000 years ago, much of North America was covered by glaciers, yet ice-free breeding habitat for songbirds, such as the Black Pole Warbler, remained in what is now Alaska and parts of Western Canada. Studies of fossil pollen found in muddy lake bottoms show that consistent winds blew across the continent on a northwest to southeast heading of 155 degrees. As Scott Weidensall recounts in his book, Living on the Wind, the ice cap produced a powerful high-pressure center sitting over central Canada, pumping strong northwest winds, precisely the conditions that would aid migrants on a 155-degree heading. The birds rode these tailwinds to traverse the vast ice fields. And today, although the continental glaciers have melted, the birds still follow this compass bearing on their way to wintering grounds in South and Central America and the Caribbean. Natural selection and the vicissitudes of life on the wing require that birds respond exquisitely to natural conditions. Their lives depend on their attunement to the world around them, and particularly during migration, to the wind. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Depends on who you're asking. This is Bird Note. Cackling geese may look a lot like Canada geese, but their slighter build and shorter beaks give them away as a distinct species. And one subspecies in particular has a very special story. Aleutian cackling geese build their nests on a chain of islands off the western coast of Alaska. In the 1700s, fur traders introduced an invasive species of fox to the islands, with devastating consequences for the geese. For decades, Aleutian cackling geese were believed to be extinct. But in the 1960s, a biologist discovered a group of around 300 birds nesting on Bull Deer Island. The fortuitous discovery allowed conservationists to put the birds on the endangered species list. And this paved the way for federal protections on their Alaskan nesting grounds and their wintering territories in Oregon and California. Thanks to this habitat conservation, there are now more than 120,000 Aleutian cackling geese, making the biannual journey between Alaska and the Gulf of Mexico. To learn how to conserve seasonal habitats and protect the future of migratory birds in your area, start at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mark Bramhill.
Thank you, Mark Bramhill, for knowledge about bird, which I love. Before that, you heard Showdown by Julian Baker and Torres here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Speaking of knowledge I love, my name is Leslie, and today I'm sharing knowledge about what obsessive compulsive disorder is in an effort to raise awareness about this complex and chronic mental health issue, and also, honestly, in an effort to honestly maybe do a little bit of advocacy for more accessible care, which I'll talk about later. But if you just joined me, you know, earlier on the hour, I was talking about what characterizes OCD and like about the OCD loop, essentially. Now, let's talk about something really important to understand, a few things that are really important to understand about obsessive compulsive disorder, which are that there are various and several subtypes of OCD. That's one thing you should know. The other thing you should know is that obsessive compulsive disorder is about the inability to sit with uncertainty and how that coincides with your values. Let's talk a little bit about the subtypes, and then I'll be able to illuminate what I mean about the values and the uncertainty part. So you might feel like you kind of know what some of the subtypes are of OCD. The most commonly discussed subtypes in mainstream media are contamination OCD and symmetry OCD, which are, you know, about needing to clean or wash your hands a lot, needing to align things perfectly on shelves and such. The issue that we, of course, run into when it comes to understanding obsessive compulsive disorder through these two subtypes, number one is that the depictions of contamination OCD and symmetry OCD in most, if not all, mainstream media is really, really inaccurate. Because two, obsessive compulsive disorder, at its very core, is ego dystonic. Ego dystonic means that whatever you're thinking about, it directly is in opposition with your values. It is in opposition with your character, what you want to be thinking about. And so in most media depictions of somebody who has obsessive compulsive disorder, it shows them enjoying the performing of compulsions. It shows them wanting to be very, very clean, wanting to stack their books up or like align their books on their bookshelf in a very particular way, shows them wanting to follow a very specific routine in order to, you know, go about their day. A person with OCD does not want those things. In fact, they are doing it because they feel so much anxiety about the thoughts, the obsessive, unrelenting thoughts that they're having, that they feel the only way in order to resolve those thoughts is to clean everything, clean their hands constantly, maybe to align their shelves in a very perfectly symmetrical way, maybe to follow a very specific routine for their day. Because if not, then something possibly could go wrong. Something possibly their biggest fear might happen. Obsessive compulsive disorder has various different subtypes. When portrayed accurately, of course, contamination and symmetry can fall into, you know, the subtypes of obsessive compulsive disorder. But there are a lot more than that. And because OCD attacks your values, and, you know, maybe not everybody values having a very orderly desk, very orderly bookshelf. Maybe not everybody values having to be very, very, very clean. That means that OCD can take various different shapes in various forms. So from here, I'm going to rattle off and maybe talk a little bit about some common obsessive compulsive disorder subtypes, just to illuminate how weird this disorder is and how it is really not just about contamination and symmetry. And if you are interested in learning more about these particular subtypes, I encourage you to maybe check out NOCD, that's N-O-C-D. They have some pretty interesting blog posts about various different subtypes of obsessive compulsive disorder. You'll be able to learn more about them through their website. So I talked about contamination and symmetry. There's relationship OCD that's really specific about your relationship to other people, oftentimes with your romantic partner or partners. There is religious OCD. There's moral scrupulosity OCD, where you're constantly thinking about good versus bad, right, wrong. And there's like little room for gray in those areas. There is a type of obsessive compulsive disorder called just right OCD. Really good couple of episodes on the Ologies podcast talks about obsessive compulsive disorder, and the host of Ologies, Allie Ward, ends up kind of disclosing a little bit of her own experience with just right OCD. It is very, very fascinating. I think that you should listen to those episodes of Ologies if today's Typically Tuesdays has been helpful for you to understand more about OCD. There's existential OCD. It's existential. There's sexual orientation OCD and gender identity OCD. And maybe the thought here is like, isn't it, if you're having thoughts about your sexual orientation or gender identity, isn't it actually healthy to like maybe try to explore those things? For a person who doesn't have obsessive compulsive disorder about those themes, yeah, it might be. For a person who does, it is very, very different because, again, obsessive compulsive disorder attacks the things that you value. So you might even be like a very, you know, you might be like a queer and trans ally, right? But if somehow you have obsessive compulsive thoughts and behaviors around your own gender identity and sexual orientation, those thoughts that you're having are not regular confusion or even like slight shame about the possibility of needing to explore your identity. It is about disturbing and unwanted thoughts about who you are or maybe are not as a person. There is also real event OCD, which sometimes coincides with false memory OCD. I know I've talked a lot about thoughts and how they're core to obsessive compulsive disorder. Real event OCD is a little bit more complicated than that because it's about things that have actually happened, right? Thoughts are things that have not happened. They just exist in our brain. Real event OCD is about stuff that has actually happened. And so a lot of the times, the key point of concern there is about the behaviors of a person who is bombarded with unwanted, disturbing, maybe thoughts, images, questions about something that's happened in the past. And I think a really interesting part about real event OCD is that it focuses a lot on guilt. So because that thing actually happened, a person who has real event OCD feels a lot of guilt and shame about the thing. And most people, when they do something cringy or inappropriate, maybe in the past, they learn from their mistake, they move on, they will shudder at the thought of having it brought up, but they move on. A person with real event OCD cannot move on, and they will experience really unhealthy levels of shame and guilt over the thing that happened. And how this sort of aligns with the rest of these OCD subtypes that are mostly thoughts-based is that it's about the behavior. It's about how you approach and understand your memories. And it's also about how you approach being able to sit with uncertainty and not knowing whether or not really, you know, maybe something happened or whether or not you're actually a good person or so on and so forth. Maybe you actually offended someone and so on. When we talk about OCD subtypes, we really also have to talk about taboo OCD subtypes because those are so taboo that they also contribute to, I think, a very poor understanding of what OCD is. Remember that obsessive unwanted thoughts in obsessive compulsive disorder are unwanted. They are disturbing. They scare the crap out of you. They make you feel horrible. They give you a lot of anxiety and distress. And so a person who has themes around harming someone or sexual themes that they don't want to have simply don't want to have those thoughts. It is not indicative of their actual desires because they are in the horrible soup of constantly being bombarded with thoughts about maybe self-harm or suicide or hurting somebody else or maybe abusing somebody, abusing even animals or loved ones or children. Maybe they are constantly bombarded with unwanted sexual thoughts about things and people that they just don't want to have. And they're performing compulsions in an attempt to, one, quell the thoughts, quell the obsessive thoughts that they're having, but also in order to gain control of some fear of uncertainty about perhaps harming somebody or abusing somebody or being like a weird pervert or something like that. Again, when we look at the subtypes of obsessive compulsive disorder, what we need to understand is that, one, they are ego dystonic. They do not align with the values that a person actually has, and they are unwanted, disturbing, distressing, anxiety provoking, scary, disgusting thoughts. And also, these thoughts are there because the person who has OCD is performing compulsions in order to gain what they think is a feeling of control over the uncertainty that they feel when they experience that distress and anxiety. And one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about OCD Awareness Week on this episode of Typically Tuesdays, and why it's important to talk about this issue in a frank but empathetic way, of course, is because I think care for obsessive compulsive disorder is really inaccessible. We've talked at length this hour about how there's just a lot of non-understanding. There's just a lot of lack of understanding around obsessive compulsive disorder and how, you know, remember that statistic, right? Most people with OCD, they spend more than 10 years essentially not being able to get a proper diagnosis and an actual diagnosis. And I think that can be very, very illuminating. As much as sad as it is, I think it can be illuminating because it can point us to the possibility that actually there are a lot more people with OCD than we previously imagined. I think this means that there could be possible grounds for there to be more adequate care and more accessible care in Canada for people who have obsessive compulsive disorder. But we won't know that unless there's more awareness around it. Big part of this frustration for me is knowing that there are a lot of people who have OCD who receive misdiagnoses when they're first trying to figure out this whole thing. So there are a lot of folks in the community, I guess, who even when they like talk to like a psychiatrist, you know, they weren't diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. But do you know who is able to offer actual insight to whether or not somebody has obsessive compulsive disorder? It is an OCD clinician, because these specific mental health professionals, they know this disorder inside out. They've seen dozens up to hundreds of people who have these issues, right? They understand, even though OCD is really complex, they get it. They have seen the way the patterns and behaviors work. Unfortunately, OCD therapy is very, very, very unaffordable in Canada. Even just getting that first YBOX assessment, I believe YBOX stands for Yale Brown Obsessive Compulsive Scale or something like that. It's the official assessment for obsessive compulsive disorder. Research tried and true, you know, you have to be able to access that with an OCD clinician. There are tools online that can help you go through it, but the only person who's going to actually be able to help you determine your results are a clinician. And while, yes, for some people, medication does work short term, and some people also, they might experience some relief from traditional forms of like talk therapy and other related modalities of therapy, the most effective tried and true method for people who want to recover from obsessive compulsive disorder and to learn the tools to help them manage it throughout the rest of their life is a modality of therapy called exposure response prevention. Essentially, in this therapy, your clinician figures out a way to constantly spike your anxiety, and you have to learn to not perform compulsions for yourself to feel better. It is a behavior-based therapy. I know I make it sound so ungraceful and so horrible, but it is a behavior-based modality of therapy, and it is supposed to help you habituate to really the feelings of anxiety that come with the false alarms that are sounding off in your head with OCD. This is a really specific type of therapy that most counselors will not be trained in when they become counselors. But given how important it is for the recovery from obsessive compulsive disorder, and given how unaffordable it is, my hope is that if we're able to talk a little bit more in a productive way, in a humanizing way about obsessive compulsive disorder, hopefully one day ERP will be more accessible to people, because more people will need it. And it's not as though there are a lot of people who are getting wealthier and wealthier. It's the total opposite. Maybe one day there will be subsidized programming in our healthcare system for ERP. Maybe more insurance policies will be able to cover ERP. That's really my hope. In a big part of today's episode about OCD is that you understand obsessive compulsive disorder a little bit better and why it sucks, but then also you continue to take on the message that is like a common theme here in Typically Tuesdays, which is the importance of accessible, affordable, and humanizing mental health care. We are hitting the top of the hour here on today's episode of Typically Tuesdays. Thank you so much for tuning in. I know it's a heavy one, and it was a lot of information, but I promise next week is going to be more fun. I'll give you a hint. Emotion, okay? Emotion. And it's going to be music heavy. All right, get into it. I'm so excited for next week's episode. But again, yeah, I really hope you learned some things about obsessive compulsive disorder today. If anything in this episode today resonated with you, I really hope that you are able to find the support that you need in order to navigate this this issue. It's hard, and it is very, very complex, and unfortunately, yeah, not everybody in your life is going to understand what you're going through, especially if you have those taboo OCD themes. And oftentimes when you have those more OCD themes that seem more mundane, but know and recognize that there are many people who are like you as well, who are constantly being bombarded with these horrible thoughts. But know that there is hope. There really, really is. Even though it might seem unattainable and also maybe unrealistic because the distress is just so real and horrifying, and there's so much uncertainty in it. It's really like what people who professionally do OCD treatment say. You simply have to accept uncertainty. I know it sucks to hear that, but unfortunately, it's true. Some rattling off some really quick resources. So, International Obsessive Compulsive Disorder Foundation is the one that I always go to understand more about obsessive compulsive disorder. It is the leading research and advocacy organization for obsessive compulsive disorder. Really interesting blog posts on there. Really, really appreciate them because they often highlight what obsessive compulsive disorder looks like in marginalized communities. And that's been, you know, that's been really interesting to read. But of course, they also have resources. So they've got pages on some self-help and also low guides to access low-cost ERP. They also have a list of really helpful books for people who are wanting to learn more about OCD. And they also have a really helpful directory for people who are ready to begin recovery. And what I've come to understand is that the International OCD Foundation directory is really the one to go to if you are looking to find a clinician who is very up to date and engaged with the new research around OCD, because, you know, this is super complex, right? You want to talk with somebody who, one, is able to hold space for that complexity, two, is able to see you as the complex human that you are. On that note, also, I strongly do not recommend looking for a counselor who only writes in their profile that they work with people with OCD, but who don't list that they have exposure response prevention therapy as one of their core modalities that they work in. Just some food for thought there. Another really good resource, I would say, actually, is a book. There are plenty of like podcasts and stuff out there. You go find the podcast, and of course that Ologies podcast episode was really, really good. But there's a book called Overcoming Unwanted Intrusive Thoughts by Sally M. Winston and Martin N. Seif. And it is the subtitle is A CBT-Based Guide to Getting Over Frightening, Obsessive, or Disturbing Thoughts. It's not written specifically for obsessive compulsive disorder. It's a little bit more general, I guess. But I think is a really good tool to learn more about the nature of thoughts and the way that we respond to them in a behavioral way. And it's a very, it's a pretty breezy read. The language is super easy to understand. It's a pretty short book as well. I think it's like 200 pages. Maybe less. It's a little bit over 150. Just a really helpful book for anyone who is interested in understanding more about unwanted intrusive thoughts. I will be sharing more resources, further learning, and even a little bit of entertainment about obsessive compulsive disorder in the show notes of this episode of Typically Tuesdays when it goes on to the archive later on this week. So you can look forward to that over at cjsf.ca. But yeah, thank you so much for tuning in today on this highly informative episode of the show. Tune into more great CJSF programming. Why don't you check out Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon every Friday morning from 10 to 11 with your host, Charlotte Sistacy Farrell. Really, really fun time over there talking about poetry, advocacy for seniors, talking also about health and wellness. I love that show. Tune in Friday, 10 to 11 here on 90.1 FM CJSF, or stream it online at cjsf.ca/streaming. All right, one final song for you. Let me just relieve you from my voice for the rest of the week, okay? Last one on our sad bangers. What is this called? Feels Bad playlist? I forgot what it's called. It's called something. I really enjoy this one. Hayley Williams is a legend and a star. This is Mirtazapine here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I've been Leslie. I'll talk to you very soon.